Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Tuesday, September 20th, 2022. We have four cases on our oral calendar for today. This is the third case, A22-0617. And please forgive me if I mispronounce the name. In the matter of the application of Mohaba Shrafdami to register title to certain land. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent. And then appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. We do have it set up so that we have two microphones next to you that you can use, or you can use the middle one. The middle one does have the timer on it, and there's also a button underneath that you can raise and lower the podium to adjust and to accommodate your height. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing, and counsel, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is David Robbins. I'm the attorney for appellant Mojtaba Sheriff Khani. The issue presented in this case is an important one, the resolution of which may very well have long-lasting impacts on real property ownership in the state of Minnesota. The question before the court today is whether a party who misuses an easement by using the easement beyond the permissible scope may avail itself of the possession exception to the Marketable Title Act's presumption of abandonment. Well, technically...
Counsel, is that really the issue on appeal here, whether it's a misuse?
I believe that it's part of the issue is whether or not a misuse occurred here, Your Honor, yes. I think another part of the issue is what to do, what result with the misuse under the Marketable Title Act. So,
but where is misuse language in the Marketable Title Act?
The Marketable Title Act's language does not have any language regarding misuse, but the underlying standard set forth in Semper by the Supreme Court would state that you need to prove use sufficient to put a prudent person on notice giving due regard to the nature and scope of the easement.
Right, and I think that's consistent with the Marketable Title Act.
Correct.
And that standard says nothing about misuse.
Correct. It does not say anything about misuse. The argument regarding misuse is, I suppose, an obvious one. In order to...
Why is it obvious if it's not in the language of the Marketable Title Act?
Well, I think that, so the Semper standard, right? So even without the language of the Marketable Title Act, which doesn't contemplate the Semper standard, that says that...
Is the Semper standard?
Use must be sufficient to put a prudent person on notice giving due regard to the nature of the easement.
So the purpose of the statute is notice, is recognized in the Semper standard. And
correct.
You have to provide notice of the existence of the easement, taking into account the purpose of the easement or the scope of the easement.
Correct. And typically, and admittedly, Semper oftentimes it comes up in the and it was adopted by the Minnesota Supreme Court to address the issue where you're using an easement different than you'd be actually having a possessory use, right? An easement is something that you use from time to time, but not in possession, physically in possession.
This court recently issued a published decision, and it's terrible. I can't think of the name.
Lundstrom? Yes, Lundstrom.
And what we said in that case was there had been no notice, and possession, as proffered by the city, was inadequate to satisfy the exception because the city said, okay, here's this land, and the city was granted an easement for public road use.
Yep.
And the city said, well, there's a utility pole on the land, so that shows our possession. And this court reasoned, well, it doesn't show possession consistent with the scope of the easement because the easement in that case was for a road. A utility pole did not communicate to people that the city had been granted an easement for purpose of a road. You'd need to, like, clear the road, put down some gravel, do something to say we're using this as a road. So I'm looking at this case, wondering if it's different, because here the easement is for vehicular traffic and pedestrian traffic, and it's been used for that purpose, and it's being used for that purpose. So why isn't that sufficient to put people on notice of the existence of an easement for vehicular and pedestrian traffic?
So I would add additional gloss, and I believe Lundstrom here is very helpful in the disposition of this case. So the way I read the opinion in Lundstrom, in essence, it says you have a electrical pole and lines, which in theory would put someone on inquiry notice that there may be an easement on their property, and then the person would have the onus to go check the real estate records and check out what might the nature of the easement be. Same thing here. You have use of appellant's driveway that may put someone on inquiry notice about an easement. When you check the real estate records, however, similar to electrical poles versus a road, an easement to benefit three parcels does not equate to an easement to benefit one parcel. So the problem, and I think implicit in the Samper standard, and I just don't think that this has come up on appeal because it might be so obvious, if you're planning on using an easement and availing yourself for the possession exception of the Marketable Title Act, you have to use the easement as set forth in the express grant.
And if you don't, what's the remedy?
If you don't, the remedy that we're arguing for, if your easement is subject to extinguishment under the Marketable Title Act, the remedy would be that the extinguishment is presumed because you're not actually engaged in continuous
use. Not aware of any law that provides support for that, so that's a new proposition of law, correct?
Correct, yes. And
so then, in a case in which we're not dealing with the Marketable Title Act, say that that had no application here, and your clients were simply saying they've misused the easement, they're only supposed to be benefiting, what would happen in that case? Nothing to do with Marketable Title Act.
Yeah, in that case, you know, assuming that the theory is a common law abandonment, this court would have to analyze whether or not there was a direct intention to abandon. Obviously, as Lundberg stated and referenced Sterling, we don't have to prove an intention here. It's just a presumption of abandonment under the MTA. Alternatively, the...
In all the cases I've seen in my time on the court having to do with people misusing easement, what generally happens is they prove a misuse and then the district court says, stop it. Here's the scope of
right.
the easement. Here's what you may do. Here's what you may not do. What law says a district court under those circumstances could say the easement's gone?
The Marketable Title Act does.
Okay, but I'm saying... No, the Marketable Title Act doesn't say that. You're asking us to interpret it to
yes.
say that. What law says, in a case having nothing to do with the Marketable Title Act, if someone misuses an easement, they lose the easement, as opposed to being subject to an order directing them to confine their use to the easement or correct their use of the easement?
Yeah. If the Marketable Title Act weren't available to appellant in this case, I'd have a much tougher road to hoe. But there are cases from other jurisdictions, admittedly not Minnesota that I'm aware of.
So there's no case in Minnesota that says if you misuse a easement, you lose it.
The closest that we get in Minnesota is Kretz, but otherwise, yes, you're correct.
Kretz, what did that case say?
Kretz stated, in a very factually similar case, except for the fact that the expanded use was foreseeable. So Kretz is a 1914 Minnesota Supreme Court case that says you cannot use an easement to access additional parcels of land beyond those contemplated in the grant. Kretz had a...
Well, I agree with that, but does Kretz say, and if you do, you lose your easement, right?
What Kretz says, it would be appropriate to enjoin the use of the easement until such time as there is a wall constructed to prohibit any use that doesn't comply with the express terms of the easement or in the buildings destroyed. It's the same standard as McCullough's.
It sounds like what I'm saying, which is the remedy for failure to comply with the express terms of the easement is to enjoin the impermissible use.
Correct. Yes.
There's no law that says the remedy is the easement's gone, yet you're asking us to read into the MTA a requirement that if use of the easement exceeds the scope of the easement, you lose it under the MTA.
So, correct. And the argument being, again, is if Kretz, again, binding law in this court, says this could be subject to an injunction would...
This. Because if we're not dealing with the MTA, we're just dealing
yes.
with, hey, the way you're using the easement is wrong, you're taking more than you're entitled to, stop it. If that doesn't result in losing the easement, in a case that's all about the permissible use of the easement, why should it result in losing the easement in the context of the MTA when the only language about the scope of the easement has to do with putting people on notice? The MTA says nothing about governing the use of the easement. It's simply a statute that says if you have an easement that's been in existence for more than 40 years, you either have to record notice of your intent to use the easement, or you have to show that within that time period you've been possessing the land in a way that's consistent with the easement. And I don't understand why in this case there wasn't possession of the land that was consistent with the easement, simply because there's an argument that they engaged in more use than they should have. And I don't understand why, even if those were the circumstances, that results in loss of the easement under the MTA when it doesn't result in loss of the easement under the common law or statutes and all of our case law saying the remedy is enjoinment.
Your Honor, the presumption, there's a presumption of abandonment here, and the burden, again, is on the respondent here.
Okay.
The argument would be simply that if there is no right to use the easement as they're currently doing it, a court would issue an injunction stopping all use, saying you have no right to use the easement, period, until such time as the building's reconstructed or destroyed. If they're not legally able to use the easement, what their use is currently is a prescriptive use, and it's not use consistent with the scope of the easement. They're not actually using the easement. What they're doing is engaging in prescriptive use for all three parcels currently. That's not using the easement. They're doing something other than using the easement. They're using the driveway, but they're not using the actual easement. Use of the easement has to be strictly complied with.
Counsel, you refer to the Kretz case. That's a 1914 case. That case did not apply or analyze the possession exception under the MTA.
It predated the possession exception.
Right.
Correct.
So you claim that's binding authority, but that's not binding authority in terms of interpretation of the MTA.
It's not binding authority interpretation of the MTA. Correct.
And so that's what we need to focus on here. And I share Judge Larkin's concerns, because it sounds like you're trying to conflate two different legal analyses and basically processes. Here we've got a Torrens action with respect to title, and the purpose of that is to clear title when these claims usually come up that I've seen when, for example, somebody has been using an easement for a certain period of time, but then they stop using it, and they haven't registered it, and they cannot show that they have had continuous use consistent with its original intent. And so it's designed to say, okay, nobody's been using this. There used to be a road here, but there's now grass there, or there are weeds, and so we want to basically clear title to it, because and they haven't been able to show continuous use. That's our only focus here, is continuous use. What evidence is there that parcel 3 here did not continuously use the easement in dispute for foot traffic and for vehicular traffic?
And this is the reason why I'm going back to Kretz. I think the element of use needs
but
to be Kretz analyzed
didn't
under Kretz.
But apply the possession exception. That's what we need
sure.
to look at here if we
right.
are going to apply the MTA.
Right, and that's why I'm saying I'm asking this court to analyze the current use under the Kretz standard and determine under the Marketable Title Act what result based on that use.
But that seems to put the cart before the horse, because we have to look at the MTA, look at the plain, see whether or not it's unambiguous or not. If it's not ambiguous, we just apply the plain language of it. And the plain language, we look at whether it has been continuously used for the purpose. And where is there in the record any evidence that it has not been continually used?
The term continuous use is a legal term of art. The term continuous use doesn't mean that they use a driveway, which is what they do. They use a driveway. They do not use an easement. They use a driveway. They have no easement rights to use that 1933 easement to access their property now, period, as currently constructed. What they're doing is engaging in prescriptive use. And prescriptive use, if given 15 years, may establish different easement rights, but they can't have their cake and eat it too. They can't say, we're both engaging in prescriptive use, and we're also engaging in use sufficient for purposes of the recorded
easement.
We're
just talking about continuous use under the MTA.
Right. And
So where, I don't, I'm...
And, well, I think...
Why prescriptive use comes into play here.
the prescriptive use comes into play because that's what's actually happening. The legal character of what they're currently doing is prescriptive use. If you look at the cases cited in the briefs, it makes...
But those cases are only persuasive. They're in other jurisdictions that do not have a comparable MTA that we have
right.
here.
Right, and
In other words, we're very limited here, Counsel. I think I hear what you're saying is you want us to extend the law, but we're just an error-correcting court, and we just apply the law as given.
I think if this court were to say that the current use made by respondents is sufficient for purposes of the Marketable Title Act, it would be disregarding Kretz. Because I think clearly Kretz governs what is permissible use. Kretz is saying, you cannot do this. You have no rights to do this. You're not using the easement. You are not currently using the easements when you're expanding the scope to three different parcels. So what they're currently doing, and just I would caution the court to be aware of the fact that this might incentivize parties to broaden their use of an easement that's subject to extinguishment on the MTA to be clear that they're putting someone on inquiry notice. I see that my time is out.
And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel, for respondent, you will have 15 minutes for your oral arguments.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Brian Varland, and I'm here on behalf of the respondents, RK Ventures LLC, Drake Bank, and the United States Small Business Administration. And this case, as Your Honors had mentioned, is a straightforward Torrens registration appeal. The two statutes, I think, that are relevant to this case are Torrens registration statute, that chapter, that calls for registration of land, which is what this proceeding is, and the Marketable Title Act, in particular, its possession exception under Subdivision 6 of Section 541.023. This case is a straightforward case asking whether a 1933 easement only for driveway or for vehicles or for footway for pedestrians to pass and to repass to and from Walnut Street along and over the same adjoining two properties on West 7th Street in St. Paul should continue to exist and be memorialized on the certificate of title.
And you're quoting there from?
That is, I directly quoted from the easement itself that was granted in 1933.
Okay.
The reason why we are here today is the appellant had sought to register title to his properties. As part of that process, several examiner reports were issued by the Examiner of Titles of Ramsey County. And the issue that was isolated and bifurcated for this proceeding was an issue of whether this 1933 easement should be memorialized in the certificate by virtue of whether the Marketable Title Act should deem it extinguished or continue to exist under the possession exception. A trial was held on August 19th, 2021. Evidence was considered, witnesses were examined, the credibility was reviewed, and based on the evidence put in the trial record, the court concluded correctly that the Sampare standard that has been talked about this morning had been met, which was considering the evidence of use sufficient to put a prudent person on notice of the asserted interest in the land, giving due regard to the nature of the easement at issue. This is the nature of this easement is for footway and for driveway purposes. It has been used that way since 1933. The evidence is abundant in the court record. The testimony is abundant from several witnesses who testified to that fact. There was a stipulation of evidence going back from May 15th, 1973 to January 1st, 1999. And then from 1999 onward, we have eyewitness testimony, including photographic testimony, demonstrating that continuous usage. The point of the two statutes that we're talking about today is, as you said, Your Honor, about clearing up title, recording interest in title. There's case law and there's the language in the statute of the Marketable Title Act that talks about clearing up ancient records that fetter the marketability of title. When you have an old record, after 40 years, it drops off if you haven't re-recorded or if you can meet one of the exceptions. We have met that exception through the continuous usage. The district court correctly ruled that the trial evidence demonstrated this continuous usage based on the evidence presented. The district court correctly ruled the respondents had satisfied the possession exception through the evidence of how the property was being used, and also how the footway, how pedestrian usage is still being used to this day. The increased or decrease of burden analysis, the district court also analyzed that issue and had made findings of fact showing that there was no increased burden on the easement. And so as to that question, if that's relevant for your consideration, the district court also correctly ruled on that issue, showing that if anything, the burden had decreased over the years. There was a time when it was a parking lot. It is no longer a parking lot. It's used for pedestrian uses. And in that regard, it's very limited pedestrian uses, emergency exits required by the city of St. Paul, some trash removal. It's a very minimal use. And so as far as the question of whether this is a increased burden or decreased burden, the trial record evidence shows it was a decreased burden.
Counsel, you argue that it's a straightforward case, and all we need to do is look at the MTA and possession exception.
That's right.
If we were to do that, do we even need to get into the use? Or, I'm sorry, the increase or decrease use issue?
Your Honor, I don't think you actually need to get into that. That is a good analysis of the question. It is a straightforward, plain meaning analysis. Did we meet the Samper standard of continuous use? Was their use continuous from that period of May 15th, 1973 up until the commencement of this Torrance proceeding in 2018?
Okay, but here we have a little bit of a wrinkle because we have parcel 3 that was owned, and that was the parcel that originally used the easement.
Correct.
And my understanding of the record is parcels 1 and 2 had no right, and that's undisputed, correct?
That's undisputed, Your Honor. This isn't a... Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, that's true. That the easement is pertinent to parcel 3, which at one point in time, there was a house on that property. It was a house behind a commercial area along West 7th Street, and that house was demolished in 1999, and it was became a parking lot that was for the Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub, which is still here today. Over time, the nature of the usage of the parking lot was modified, so there was a time when a patio was put in, and so there was a period of time from around 2000 to 2008 when there was parking, and then there was a patio that was added so that there could be patrons sitting there so fewer cars could park, and then there was a period of time after 2017 in which no cars could park at all. It was literally an enclosed patio for patrons to use the property. With that being said, we disagree with the characterization, not supported by evidence in the record, that patrons or employees or owners of the property are using the easement to go to parcels 1 and 2. There is ample evidence in the trial record that, and the district court noted, that restrictions were made to prevent that kind of usage. Patrons are to go through the front entrance. There are cameras all around the restaurant for safety, and they make it a priority to have the people come in through the front door so they know who comes in the front door. Deliveries are made from the sidewalk adjoining Walnut Street. There is a locked gate on this patio. And so as far as using the easement, it's used for pedestrian purposes, but it's to get to and from parcel 3. It is a speculation that there are people coming and going from parcels 1 and 2. There was no evidence in the trial record that that was occurring. There was.
But isn't parcels 1 and 2, or isn't parcel 3 now owned by the owners of parcels 1 and 2?
They are in common ownership, that is correct.
Okay, and so the patio area, and that belongs to the owners of parcels 1 and 2 then, right?
So at one time, Your Honor, the parcels had separate ownership, and they came into common ownership in 1999. And so now all three are owned together, and there was no objection made to them being owned together. There was no objection made in the years following 2000, as the district court noted in their decision. Years went by, and no one objected to the parking lot of a house being used as a parking lot for a business on parcels 1 and 2. As a matter of fact, Your Honor, that if you look at the procedural history of this case started out as a case about you can't show that you've used it all these years and kind of morphed into, okay, I guess you show that you used it, but it was interrupted in 2017. And then it became a case of you made it into a single enclosure, and that's the reason why the easement should be extinguished. The fact that there was an enclosure put in that enclosed the three parcels together after in the years 2008 and past 2017, so that you can come and go, doesn't change the nature of the easement being appurtenant to parcel three. There's no case law that was cited that requires that. The district court noted that correctly, that this is a case that you still just look at the nature of the easement. If you want to have an easement that's restricted to how you enclose it, it could have been written in 1933 to say for residential purposes only, for commercial purposes only, for open air access, non-enclosed use. It did not say that, given due regard for the nature of the easement under Samper and the other cases we cite in our brief. This is an allowable use in which people can come and go from parcel three on this easement. To get to, there's a couple of points I wanted to get to that were questions asked of the appellant's counsel, and I agree with the court on this. The question about remedies is critical here. Forfeiture is disfavored in the law for extinguishing easements. The Marketable Title Act is not a vehicle to extinguish easements. It's a vehicle to recognize that property records should be cleaned up because they're ancient. To Judge Larkin's point, in a common law situation, which is not this case, was not the case tried, not the case pled, not the issues identified in the examiner's reports, there could be situations where there could be claims of trespass or for instance, quiet title. The common law has a variety of tools to deal with how easements are being used. This is not that case. This is a Torrens registration that says, should this easement be on the certificate of title or should it not? And the evidence has showed it should be. But to the point of, let's say this was a common law case, it gets to remedies, and the remedy ordinarily isn't extinguishment. It is taking the time to look at the usage. What usage can you do? What usage can't you do? But it's just not fair to, or it's not correct to presume that this case is the proper vehicle for making that case. That this court is an error-correcting court, as Your Honor noted, and they're bound by the Supreme Court's reading in Samper of the Marketable Title Act.
What about the argument that the 1914 Supreme Court case, the Kretz case, that really should guide our decision here?
I completely disagree with that. Your Honor is correct that it predates the Marketable Title Act. It is a common law remedies case. And even in that case, it's not a case of extinguishing easements. And so what the appellant is asking for in this case is, three times over, not merited. Kretz is a relevant case for purposes of considering how to view an easement and its usage. That's the most you can get from Kretz. But this is a marketable title Torrens registration proceeding, and so we have to look only at what the Marketable Title Act says, which is, was there still use being made? Implicit in the briefing of appellant here and down below is the idea that it doesn't matter how much evidence you have that people were using it, Tom Reed walking on it, employees walking on it, people walking on it for decades, driving on it, aerial photos. You could have a mountain of evidence, but we're going to presume that none of that matters if we can find a scintilla of the possibility that you went from parcel three to parcels one and two. That is not what the Marketable Title Act was meant to remedy, Your Honor. So I would say the Kretz might be helpful in a different case. That's not this case. And the court should focus on the nature of the easement at issue and the trial record evidence that the district court had a chance to review the credibility of the experts on under a clearly erroneous standard. As to the second issue raised, the district court also noted it's a mixed question of law and fact, should be reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard. That standard has not been met in this case. No clear error of law has been made in this case. The district court correctly relied on Samper and the Marketable Title Act. I should note, Your Honor, that as far as, and maybe we don't need to go there, it sounds like the question of burden is maybe not relevant, but to the extent that the question of burden is relevant to this analysis, It is not correct to suggest that the appellant is unduly burdened by having this easement on his property, since he uses this same driveway easement area that is his fee title owned area for, as an emergency exit. That evidence is in the trial record as well. So this would have been something that would still be used, notwithstanding that my clients have an easement on the property. For the reasons I've just stated and also stated in the brief of respondents, we respectfully request that the Court of Appeals affirm the District Court's judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel Appellant, we will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll take a brief moment just to add additional gloss onto statements made by Respondents' Counsel. There's a statement that no one objected to the use of the easement area to serve a parking lot as opposed to a house back in 1999 when the respondent reformed their property. At that moment in time, there really wasn't grounds to object because, again, the easement was being used with inside its permissible scope. It's a vehicle and pedestrian access point to Parcel 3 and Parcel 3 alone. It was being used that way up until 2017. There's a contention that the argument has changed over time. That's not true. Appellant's argument has always been, amongst other theories, that by combining Parcel 3, the benefit parcel, into a single closure with Parcel 1 and 2, the respondents are not engaged in actual use of an easement. They're engaged in use of a driveway. I believe it was Your Honor Reyes who stated that this would be an expansion. If the court adopted appellant's view of the law here, it would be an expansion of Sampere. Again, I would argue it's clearly not an expansion of Sampere simply because all cases that came before the Supreme Court under the Sampere standard and before the Sampere standard was officially adopted, Wickelman, for instance, all use that was discussed in those cases was compliant with the terms of the grant. It's always been the case that the court has upheld under the Sampere standard and, you know, the predating cases like Wickelman, that use, if it's use is upheld, but it's consistent with the terms of the grant. This is a novel case where there is no case law, either one way or the other, saying that use that doesn't comply with the terms of the grant can still be sufficient for continuous use purposes under the same.
How is the use of vehicles and foot traffic not consistent with the 1933 easement language?
Because it's not the method of use, it's the scope of use. The scope of use, what property is served. Parcels 1 and 2 have no easement rights. That's been adjudicated. Parcel 3 is the only parcel that has an easement right.
But
and
isn't Parcel 3 using it?
Parcel 3 is not using it consistent with the scope of the easement. Parcel 3 is using it in conjunction with Parcels 1 and 2, and that's the CRET standard and then also the Colder standard.
But that's not the issue here. We're really just looking at Parcel 3 as to whether Parcel 3's use.
You cannot segregate.
Using the easement consistent with the 1933.
Parcel 3 is not using the easement. They're not. Parcel 3 is using a driveway. Parcel 3's use of the easement cannot be segregated from Parcel 1 and 2's conjunctive use. That is Kretz and that is Kohler, Minneapolis Athletic Club versus Kohler, which said very clearly, it is well settled that the extent of an easement should not be enlarged by legal construction beyond the objects originally contemplated or especially agreed by the parties.
It sounds like you're arguing misuse, though, which is a separate common law claim and separate remedies from the MTA, though, and the possession exception and whether or not the possession exception of continuous use.
I am arguing misuse, but I'm not arguing a common law claim. I am arguing.
I understand that, but it sounds like you're conflating the two and trying to force the common law analysis into a statutory analysis.
I'm most certainly not trying to apply the common law standard, which would require intent to abandon. What I am asking this court is to consider if use were enjoined, say that change the posture of this case a little bit and we had an injunction, right? and they had to argue that they were still continuous using it. The only thing that they could argue would be that their intention is not to abandon it, abandon the easement. So if an injunction had issued, and again, we're ripe for an injunction at this point, but there is not one that's issued, appellant had his choice of remedies, but if the use had been enjoined and parcel three could not legally use the easement until the building was reconstructed, again, there's a presumption of abandonment. If use stops under the MTA, the abandonment bar falls and they cannot again go into possession. When their use is subject to an injunction, it would be enjoinable use. It is not legally permissible use under the scope of an easement, and it cannot be grounds to prove continuous use under the MTA. The MTA always has been applied in situations where use is compliant with the express terms of the grant. To rule otherwise would not only incentivize parties to misuse easements so they could get the inquiry notice standard, but would also vitiate the CRET standard, which clearly says that this is not proper use. Thank you, Your Honor. I have nothing further.
Thank you, Counsel. We have no further questions. Thank you both for your briefing, which was excellent, and of course your oral arguments as well. We really appreciate that. We will be issuing an order within the 90-day statutory time frame. Thank you both. Your Honor.